Hi, and welcome to The Chat. My name is Leah Somerglue. Each week on The Chat, we shine a light on the lives and careers of UTS alumni here at the 2SER studios. This week, my guest on the show is Ana Maria Escobar. Ana Maria was born in Australia and raised in Colombia, and at the age of 19, she moved back to Australia to study fashion design at UTS. She has been the creative director at luxury accessory brand Oriton, and she's currently the general manager of brand and creative at Big W. Let's have a listen to her story. Let's start with your childhood. You were born in Australia but raised in Colombia, is that right?
Yes, yeah. So I started, like, funny enough, I'm born here. I have to always explain kind of the accent every day, I think. But I was born in Australia, and then I lived here till I was 5 years old, and then went back and lived in Colombia in South America. So yeah, it was quite, like, mum and dad are Colombian, and we just went back. So yeah, that's where I kind of grew up, and I lived there till I was 19, and then came back again. So that was the beginning.
What was your childhood like in Colombia?
Childhood, okay. It was pretty interesting. Like, I would not change it. Like, I would not change it for the world. I have a 4-year-old now, and I'm very lucky that I live in a place that is so safe. Because living in Colombia was hard. Like, it was, It had the good and bad, I would say. So I had fantastic kind of growing up was incredible. Like, you were able to go to the farm and do kind of amazing things in a way, but at the same time you had the contrast of a very volatile place going through a lot of many political issues and being extremely unsafe. So I would say childhood was fantastic because I had all my family there. My mum is one of 12, so I had a massive family, cousins, and weekends going up to the farm and having incredible life. But then when I was growing up and being really aware of how unsafe the place was, I think that was kind of when you just go, okay, this is just not going to be right for me to grow up in this kind of environment. But again, like any South American place, it has the good and the bad, which is good to be exposed to, I guess.
Absolutely. And before you moved to Australia and studied here, you studied industrial design in Colombia, is that correct?
Yes. So I have a very big family, and I remember kind of one of my cousins, or it was like a mum's cousin or something, but we all call cousins, I guess. She studied industrial design, which was a really unusual thing for anyone to study in South America, because everyone is kind of like a doctor or a lawyer. And all of a sudden, I used to go to her house and see how she specializes in typography. Like, it was one of the things that she really kind of worked on. And I remember she started to explain to me repeats and how they work and how tile systems work. And I really started to get, like, I really liked it. It was kind of like this funny thing that I got really into kind of repeats and textiles and all these different things. And I also had, my grandma was very creative, and she used to do like a lot of embroidery. And so creativity was always kind of around me, in color especially. So industrial design was my go-to. So I did, I finished high school when I was really young. I finished high school when I was 15. So my first semester in university was when I was 16, and straight into industrial design. So I studied industrial design in Colombia for 5 years. And that was an incredible, incredible degree. Like, I absolutely love it. The things that you get exposed to as an industrial designer and the method of thinking is very, very special. But in a way, being in South America, you have that 360 view as well, and you become quite you think things in a different way because of the economies of the country, and not everything you don't get out of uni, and everything is given to you in a way. So you become a very 360 kind of designer. You learn a little bit of everything, like graphics and textiles and industrial, and you make things happen. Like, it's just it was an incredible degree actually for me to do. So from there, it was my thought process was like, okay, I go to Australia, and when I get there, I'm going to do a master's on industrial design, or really keep studying industrial design. And when I got here, I was kind of like, okay, I'm like 19 or 20. I think I have time for another one. So I studied fashion and textile design, and that's what I did at UTS.
Was it a culture shock when you moved back to Australia for the first time in how many years had it been since you first lived in Australia?
It was probably 12 or 14 years. It was, you know what, it's a really funny space because I had this great conviction of like, oh, I'm just going to go and I'm going to study these and this is what I'm going to do. Did I never thought how far I was, like from home? It was just this bizarre thing where I was focused on what I wanted to do, but I never thought as a, oh, it's so far and it's so different. And when I arrived, I remember arriving at the airport and kind of people going, okay, so where you come from again? And my English was really, really bad because you come from Colombia with a little bit of American kind of knowledge of English. But you get here and the accent, everything throws you. So I'm at the airport with this Australian passport and they're looking at me going, okay, hang on 2 seconds. Where do you come from again? Like, it was just this bizarre place to be. But I was really, I don't know, like, I felt at home. It was really bizarre. Like, for me, it was a really easy place to find friends. And I didn't have any friends here, really. I had a friend of my mom, the daughter, came to study here to do the same as me at New South Wales University. And we just became really good friends. But it was a really easy place for me to be in. Like, I don't know. I never thought of, oh my gosh, this is just going to be hard. Like, it was just so easy. And people were so friendly. And especially the university was incredible. Like, yeah, I can't really fault it, to be honest. Like, it was all very,
a smooth
very
transition
easy for me in a way. Yeah.
Did you have any family here when you moved back?
No, I don't. Wow. I don't have anyone. So I arrived on my own. It was a big shock, actually. Like, that part was kind of like, wow, like, really, I'm here on my own. But it was, I don't know, I embraced it. Like, I don't think it was a moment where I kind of went, what did I do? Like, it was, I really did embrace it, and I was ready to learn. And everything just, after coming from the 90s in Colombia and everything that happened there, everything just felt so, so nice. And so I could live kind of, my window open, I could walk around, like, it was fantastic. It was so, so good. It was a really positive experience for me, I have to say.
And what made you decide to study fashion at UTS?
So I went to the university and I had Eric was the teacher that actually interviewed me. He used to teach illustration at the time, and he's a fantastic man. And I remember sitting with him and I went, no, I don't know if I want to do a master's. And we had like this conversation, very broken conversation, because I couldn't really speak English that well. But he really helped me through it. And I had like my portfolio and I had a lot of work anyway to show. So that really did help me. But I really wanted to study something else within design. And fashion and textile was a great thing for me to follow, especially the textile side of things as well. So I just decided they gave me subject. I got subject exemption for the first year and a bit. So I was able to start in second year. That was a bit tough because I was already kind of like, I already did one degree. So to get into like the story, and it felt like people felt a little bit younger than where I was and what I was doing. And I remember I used to record my classes because, of course, in a different language, it was hard.
Yeah, it would have been challenging.
But I kind of understood everything they were saying, but it was little things that I didn't know quite well. I'm like, so what does that mean? So I will record them and then I will translate them. So it was pretty intense. It was so intense, actually, when I think about it, but I enjoyed it.
That's great. And when you graduated, where did you first work?
So I had this job where on the weekends when I was at uni, I used to work at Oraton, the handbag place. So I started, like, I work in different retail stores and, like, Levi's in some different retail stores. But then I got a job at Oraton. And I remember looking at the handbags. I was always really into, like is the perfect combination between industrial and fashion, because it was like these 3D kind of objects, but they were fashion. So I got really into it. And I remember I asked the, I went straight to the source. I was quite bold. I went straight to the CEO at the time, Tom Lane. It's one of the sons of the owners of Oraton. And I asked him for an interview. So I went and chat with him, show him my portfolio, and say to him, look, I would love to work on your studio. It will be a great experience for me. And he said to me, look, right now we don't have anything, but we call you if anything comes up. And I'm like, yeah, perfect. 2 weeks later, he calls me and he's like, we need an assistant designer. Of course, it doesn't pay much and he's just studying and blah, blah. Do you want to come and do it? I'm like, yeah, perfect. And they were in Balgala, like it was like an hour drive to get there. And I'm like, yep, no problem, I'm doing it. So I started at Oraton, and I remember asking for a day off to go and get graduated. Like, I think I was one of the first to start really working. And it was incredible. It was such a great opportunity for me. Like, most of the people that were there, like, they were just starting to really set up the design studio. So I was exposed to a lot of things, and I was able to kind of run with menswear really quickly or start designing women's or getting... So it wasn't like a real assistant designer job. I was able to actually put pen on paper really quickly, and that was really exciting. And then from there, we just kind of, yeah, it just kind of kept moving. But that was definitely my first job, Oraton.
You're listening to The Chat on 2SER 107.3. My name is Lead Summerglue, and I'm talking to Ana Maria Escobar, who's currently the General Manager of Brand and Creative at Big W, and she's a UTS alumni. And so from there, you stayed on and off for a number of years, building the label to become the powerhouse accessory brand that it is today. Do you want to talk about your role as when Sally McDonald got in touch with you in 2006 and asked you to become the creative director? Do you want to tell me about that time and how you got there as well?
That was actually, it was a really, look, I have had this conversation like with a couple of people before where I never ever really planned my career. Like, I never sit down and went, okay, so by this age, I want to be such and such, or this is the title that I want. Like, I've never been driven by the title or what I'm going to become, but it was more the actual opportunity in the craft of design, like being able to actually move businesses or being able to transform businesses through design. I find it amazing. Like, I find it just such a powerful tool that I don't think people use as much. So for me to get into a place, it'd be cool from, because I worked for Oraton, I was a senior designer, then I left, worked for a couple of more brands, and then I got the call from Sally to come back, which Tom has spoken to her about. And I was like, okay, so let's see what's happening. And I had that feeling of like, I haven't really done my part there yet. Like, I was able to be a senior designer, etc., but I really wanted to get into the brand because what happened to me is that I felt that Australians find really hard to talk about brands and to talk about themselves. So Oraton being such an Australian brand and place of origin being so much imprinted in the DNA of the brand is something that I felt that we needed to bring to life. So it got me into some incredible conversations and exploring Australia in a very different way, and it was fantastic for me. But when I came back, it was very much about like sitting down and starting to do the job again, because I knew how the machine kind of worked in a way, but I knew that I had to reinvent it and tell a different story. So when Sally and I started, financially the brand wasn't in a good place. So it was kind of a starting from a white canvas, and I think that was pretty much the brief. It's like, what would you want to do with it?
And would you be able to explain what Oraton, how Oraton was before?
I think
what kind of market
it was
suited for, that sort of thing.
Yeah, I think when I started, it was a brand that had lost a little bit of direction, I would say, and they weren't confident. Like, it was a little bit of a shy and fall into being their grandmother's back, and maybe every now and then people will tell the story of the mesh, but not really. So it was a little bit of like, oh, so many brands are there and so many other people doing great things that they got a little bit quiet is what I feel. So for me, when I started, was like, hang on 2 seconds. How long has this brand been around? So I started to ask almost the obvious questions. And my first go-to was Robert Lane, which is the owner of the brand. So I sat with him and went through a full afternoon of just asking, where did this started? Why does the brand actually exist? Like, and he started telling me some stories that I was like, okay, that's it. Like, this is the brand, the first brand used to go to the opening of the Opera House, or it started in 1939, or like some incredible stories that people normally don't talk about them and when kind of brought to the surface. So my idea from the beginning was like, I'm not going to make this brand something that is not. I just want to really go back to where it started and bring that to the surface and tell a true story. So that's why I think it worked, because it was very easy for me to tell. It was a storytelling kind of space where I was able to, because I was truly fascinated by the brand. Like, I think it had a lot of stories and beautiful things that happened with the brand, and it was so imprinted into Australian's DNA. And I used to get like old ladies coming to tell me about the mesh bag that they worn for the wedding, and they pass it on to the daughters. And it's that romantic element to it that, being Australians, people don't talk about it. But for me, it was easier because I guess I had the South American in me that allowed me to add that storytelling. So and then that was something that we really quickly started to translate into product. And I remember in the 70th birthday or 75th birthday of the brand, I did a limited edition bag where I incorporated mesh into the leather bag, and that flew. Like, it sold so well, and I just remember saying to them, I just love how narrative and how original and authentic stories add to product, and that's when you get a bestseller, and that's when product actually sells. You don't have to force it or try to be something that you're not. It's just how authentic the brand is and being able to translate it through product. So it was a pretty amazing journey, I would say.
So essentially you looked at the history of the bag, but then modernized it. How did you, what kinds of changes did you make to modernize the brand?
Yeah, we actually, look, I had, and this is where my industrial design kind of kicks in. Mm. I love to see how things are made. So I used to spend a lot of time in factories and making sure that we work on new ways of doing things. So the biggest thing that I brought kind of into the brand was the idea of using mesh, taking it from the kind of 80s looking crazy gold mesh into having it just as a little trim or little suggestion on a beautiful tan vaqueta bag. So it was bringing kind of what Origin was becoming, which is that kind of worn beautiful tan leather, and adding a little bit of the mesh through it. But to be able to get that sewn together, it was a massive work from the factory, myself and the designers. So it was very much sitting in the factory going, how are we actually going to stitch leather into the mesh? So it had a lot of kind of technique, I will say, that actually took them that back, especially into that new space, because it was new ways of doing things, and we actually saw a lot of people adopting it really quickly. It was a pretty good experience.
So you were changing the quality and the craftsmanship, but the product price, so essentially then the product price would rise. Was that a bit of a gamble, did you feel, selling things at a higher price?
I think I had a really good kind of a space to be able to play with the numbers in a safety or the collection or the brand architecture, I would say, because the core of the brand, the staples and the bags that were always there, they were almost a cult. So I had this little space of a 10% or 20% where I was able to play with new things all the time. But I was able to then see how far I was, the elasticity of the price point as well, and how far I could take it, but being able to justify it, because I would say Origin is a very honest brand. It's not a brand that it goes into high luxury just for the sake of it. It's a reason why you're paying that, in a way. So for me to be able to do limited edition bags or things that were done in a different way, it was, I had the trust, I guess, of the company as well for me to play with things like that. So yeah, it was almost easy for me to be able to introduce those new techniques, etc.
How do you see the consumer's experience of retail change over the past few years? Do you think people want value over quality? Or the opposite?
I think retail is going through so many changes, and it sounds cheesy because I think retail is just almost a natural thing. Retail just changes, is the way it is, because consumers want something today, something different tomorrow. But I remember when the global financial crisis hit, that everyone used to talk about, oh, retail, and it's so bad, and everything is so slow, but yet I will go to the city and I will see Apple and Nespresso with lines at the door. And I'm like, so is it retail that is bad, or is it that the experience and what we're giving the customer is not aligned to what they're looking for? Because I think that's a different conversation. And I think that's what happened with online and with Amazon's coming through. I don't think it's necessarily something that is going to kill the way we operate or how people shop. It's more that the expectations of the customer change, and they change super, super quick. It's not like before that they used to give us 2 years or a year to adapt. Like, if you remember, for example, when you tap your card, like to pay something, you expect it now. And that happened probably a year ago or 2 years ago, but now you expect it. Now everywhere you go, you just want to tap. Like, you forgot about
it. It's changed so quickly, yeah.
Yeah, so everything is just changing so, so quickly and becomes an expectation. So if as a brand you paralyze and you have 100 systems where you don't move quick enough, you become almost like you're not top of mind. It's very, very quick for them to move. But in saying that, though, I do believe that Australia has, and every country does, have a level of loyalty for the own brands too. So if you tell the story well, then I'm sure that the customers will follow, and the customers will stay true to those brands that they love, because they're part of the conversation and part of the story.
That's a really interesting observation. Let's move to where you're working now. Last year, you made the move over to Big W as the general manager of brand and creative. And Sally McDonald again came in and wanted you. You guys must be a good team.
Yes. But then she left me.
Oh, has she left?
Yes.
So where do you see Big W fitting in the landscape of Australian retail? Is it a supermarket? Is it a discount department store? Where is it going?
It's definitely a discount department store. Big W is just an incredible brand again. Like, I think it's been a little bit in the background, but it has a lot of potential. And to me, it's more what value we can add to the narrative of this brand. Because I guess when you move into these more volume, bigger, kind of established general merchandising retailers, narrative is less important. But I would say now it's becoming more and more important. So how we behave, the brands we create, are equally important as the specialty stores. I think it's moving into a really exciting place, where I guess the number one thing, of course, in this space is price and price perception. But very important that we have value and we have quality. So that's the other kind of elements that you need to keep in mind when you're creating product. But at the same time, you are talking to a customer that wants better things, that wants a better life, and it wants the house to look pretty, and it wants the kids to look well-dressed, and you have to do it all within a budget, which is a fantastic mind frame or fantastic brief to play with as a designer.
Is it a bit of a shift from working in luxury accessories like Origin?
Yeah, it is. It's a really funny space to me, because I have spoken about it kind of a couple of times, but everyone is like, wow, so you move from luxury, you move. And I'm like, you know what? I think Australian customer is not very democratic. So they can move from luxury to this kind of apartment store really, really quickly. And the method of design is still the same. Is how quick you do it, or what the focus is at the time, or how many people, like the audience just became bigger. To me, that's the most exciting thing, that all of a sudden I'm talking to a larger audience and I've been able to affect more and more families, or being able to affect more and more people. So I think the method of design to me is still the same.
What's your opinion on online shopping? Do you think it threatens the department store experience?
Oh, I think online is fantastic. Like, online is where you start your research and then you end up in a store. And I think we have to be really kind of aware that they know the enemy. They actually complement the customer journey and the customer mission. So I think it's great that people are moving more and more even into mobile now than the actual desktop, and people are on the go and they seeing things that they like and buying them, and they want to create a story and then link it into Instagram, and it becomes such a kind of good source of information from any brand to be able to see what your customer do, what they want, how they want to purchase it. I think it's fantastic. So I think online is something. I think the danger of online, though, is that in the Australian conversation, it's been very much like, oh, online is coming and Amazon is coming. They become these kind of like a myth. Online has been working for 20 years in the States. Like, it's not that it's coming. It's been here and it's happening. So we just have to deal with it, and we have to make sure that it complements our brands, if that makes sense.
Yeah,
so,
absolutely.
So it's not that you have one or the other one, is that they both equally important. So your online experience has to reflect exactly what the customer is going to feel when they go into your store, exactly when they leave your when they get your brochure, and exactly when they're on your Instagram. So it's how do you create the holistic conversation that is more powerful than anything else? I think it's dangerous when retailers start looking at it as a separate thing, that you have your online and then you have your retail stores. Very important to keep the conversation together, because it's always just one brand and one conversation with your customer.
And just lastly, Anna Maria, I just want to know, where do you see the future of Australian retail going? Is it bigger mega malls or completely online, or a combination of the two, or neither?
You know what? I had a really funny experience this weekend, because I went to... I think we went down to Bondi really quickly. I have a 4-year-old, so really it's not that I actually shop that much. And I went to this brand, Watson & Watson, and then for some reason I read about Beckham Bridge, and it's all these Australian designers coming through. And I remember probably 10 years ago when Susan Bide was happening, and Marks, and it's almost like a rebirth of Australian brands. And I think niche is still so relevant. So I would actually say that it would always be a mix. Like, I think we will always have those little new niche brands coming through that only few people have them, and they're fantastic, and then they grow into something else. Or then you have, I think anyone that is in the middle, I think they will find it really challenging. I think luxury, high luxury, and then discount are definitely where they need to be, or too high or too low. The middle, I think, is the harder one. But point of difference is a must-have. Like, if you have a brand, can't be like anyone else. You need a story and you need narrative. So I don't know if Australia will get too crazy into just ordering things online and never going out again, or I think the balance was still there. And we have... I don't think it's not like the States where people really love going to shopping malls and spend time shopping. People don't do that here because we have a beautiful beach to go to, or the park, or there's a little bit more balance between shopping and going out, or spending an afternoon at the beach. I don't think it will be radical changes. I think people will get more used to going between online and going to a store, and wanting to go to a little niche street market, or I think the balance was still there.
That was Anna Maria Escobar talking to me.